You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes. Thanks for tuning in. I felt like sharing a little bit of a comedy story with you guys today. More of a vent, I guess, than anything else. And it doesn't really have to do with the interview, which is going to come later, which is a great, fun interview. But it was just something that I wanted to talk about to get off my chest a little bit, I guess. It's hard to explain. I guess I felt the way I felt about it, but then I had something else happen, which completely changed how I felt about it. I'll just get into it, I guess. On occasion, will do corporate comedy. And for those of you that don't know, corporate comedy shows are very, very difficult. All of the variables that go into what work for a regular comedy show are gone, pretty much. Namely, everybody's sober. Not just me. Everybody's sober. People don't know that they're going to be at a comedy show. They didn't choose to be at a comedy show. They're likely being made to be at the comedy show by their employers. They're afraid to laugh at certain things, especially with like some of my jokes. Like I have some drug references and stuff, and I do look around and I laugh because I see people that I know want to laugh at a good cocaine joke, but then they know that their boss might know that they did cocaine once, you know, whatever. It's just different things to factor. But there are people out there, believe it or not, that do not like comedy shows. I've met them. I've tried to get them to come to mine, and they flat out look at me and say, I don't like comedy. I don't know what's wrong with those people, but to each their own. So there are people out there that exist. So imagine you go to a work function that you pretty much have to go to, and then partway through the whatever function is. Like, I remember when I had a day job how much I hated being in, like, these staff meetings because they had nothing to do with me. You know, I was, like, data entry, and they're talking about casework and clients, and I was like, I don't need to be here. I don't need the camaraderie. I don't need to feel like I'm part of the team. Just let me go get my work done when it's quiet, when everybody's gone, you know? So I can't imagine, you know, being made to sit through a comedy show that I didn't want to go to, that I didn't plan on going to, that, you know, feels like work or whatever. I can understand. I know why it's more difficult than a regular comedy show. But the problem is, I've had them go very well. I've had them go lukewarm. I've had them go everywhere in between. But recently I did one, and I met with this woman a few times. I actually performed for her before, and that's why she hired me for this event that she was having. And I asked her no less than 4 times, and I asked her boss if there was anything that was off limits. And they said no. They gave me some, like, technical things, like stuff that was very specific to their company that was off limits. And I was like, I wouldn't have joked about that anyway because, one, it's not funny. But, two, how would I even know about that? So I was just like, you know, yep, no problem. And I said, you know, how do you feel about swearing? And they were like, you know, not a lot of it, which is fine because I know how to not swear. There's only a couple of jokes that I really feel like are lacking without, you know, a little F-bomb in there, but I don't need to use it like punctuation. I can be a professional. I can do what I'm told. I can do what's needed for the job. And if, you know, they said, and I told them that, you know, I'm sober. I make some references to not being sober. And other than that, you know, I make fun of my husband a little bit, and I, you know, talk about perimenopause and basically gave them like the rundown of my set. And they said, no problem. No problem. Don't worry about it. That sounds fine. Blah, 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 de blah. So I get up. I do my set. It didn't go great. These people were very tight. They were a very tight audience. I did my best. While I was doing it, though, the boss guy sat right up front and was like heckling me. So I made him part of it. So when I was making like the drug references, I'd be like, yo, he's high right now, you know, just trying to include him. And he was laughing, and he seemed to be having a really good time. And After 15 minutes was up, I invited him up to the stage to take back over. I was like, all right, you know, like, that's done. It was kind of painful. They weren't in the mood for comedy, and that's fine. That's happened before. I'm sure comedians much more famous than me would tell you the same exact thing. So anyway, I get done and I walk up to the woman who has hired me. And I said, you know, I hope that was okay. And she looks right at me. She goes, well, I'm probably going to lose my job, but whatever. And walks away from me. Honestly, I did not know how to react when she said that. And I still don't really know how to react. Like, I got pissed off, but I kept that to myself because I'm a professional and I had more work to do. We had to play some more music, and I just, you know, didn't really need to speak with her anymore at that point. I knew what to do for the job, so I continued the job, and when the job was over, I packed my stuff up, and I had my guitar player with me, and I had my sound engineer with me, and we all packed up, and we left. And I saw her on the way out, but she was talking to somebody, and I just left, you know, and I waited. I gave it like a day, and I sent a message saying, you know, I'm sorry. I hope I didn't put you in a, you know, compromised position. I certainly didn't, you know, mean to jeopardize your job. However, like, you know, I'm sorry, but because honestly, I wasn't really sorry. I'm sorry if they were unhappy with it, but I'm not sorry for doing the job that I did. And I said, I assumed that you had seen my comedy before, and that was why you asked me to do it. Because, like, I can't imagine hiring somebody to do a job and never really looking to see how they do at that job, when, especially in a job like this where there are thousands of videos for you to take a look at. And I did pretty much like my basic, you know, set, my basic opener, and it's available all over the place, but it was like a tamed down version. Like, I didn't do anything too racy, and I've never thought of myself as like being super racy anyway. I swear a lot and I talk about drugs, but you know, I don't do the drugs anymore and I don't have to swear. So I really, honestly, I was befuddled by this response. But also part of me was like, I don't know, like, sometimes I go out and I have, you know, a bad experience at a restaurant, or, you know, I stay at an Airbnb that's less than great. And I'm just like, you know, I just don't stay there anymore. I just don't eat at that restaurant anymore. I don't try to, like, embarrass or, you know, dress down the person like that. I don't feel like she needed to say, and I don't think that I put her job at jeopardy, honestly. So I sent this apology, and I did say, you know, I assume that you had seen it before you asked me to do it. Regardless, I am sorry if that you were not satisfied and if I put you in an uncomfortable position. And I sent a similar thing to her boss, apologizing to him too. And I haven't heard back from either one of them, and that's fine. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought back to all of the other situations that I had with this person that didn't affect me directly. And I realized that it really honestly didn't have that much to do with me. Like, the venue that we had it at, she complained about every single aspect of it. She felt like they weren't treating her very well, that they weren't taking her seriously, that they weren't accommodating her needs and her wants. And I mean, she had a problem with the food. She had a problem with the room set up. She had a problem with which room they were going to be in. She wanted to be in a different room with the windows, and she didn't understand. She wanted an extra room to store stuff. And as somebody who also does event planning, I had like solutions and stuff. I go, well, if we did, you know, a drop thing over here, I go, you could put something behind where we're set up and you could store stuff back there. I said, maybe we can do this. Like, I kept coming up with solutions. I kept trying to help her because that's what I'm prone to do as somebody, because I was very involved in the planning of this because of how much this woman is. That's the best way I can put it. She's a lot. But all these little things that she did, all these little peccadillos that she had, they weren't towards me. And so I guess I didn't really like pay attention to them. I was just like, well, we'll just make sure that you're happy. We'll make sure that the job gets done. And then it got turned on me and I realized that, you know, she's just an asshole. But also when I did an event for her before that, I realized too, and I completely forgot until this moment. It's like when she said to me, I'm probably going to lose my job because of you, and walked away, like everything flashed back and I remembered every little bit. And I remember the event that I did before for her. She complained. The caterers, it was the first time that I ever wanted to meet the caterer because I had so many questions about some of the things that they got that I wanted to get myself, some of the ingredients. And there's this charcuterie board with this like fruit spread and cheese. And I wanted to know the cheese and the spread and all of it. Like everything was just delicious. And so at the end of the night, I was like, oh, what's the name of the caterer? I'd love to, you know. And she goes, I'm not really happy with them right now. And I said, Oh, I'm sorry. What happened? She goes, they showed up with the food in foil. And I said, okay. Like, were they? She goes, did they serve it in foil? She goes, no, they plated it and they brought it out. They served it on plates. And I go, okay. I was like, so it's just how they brought the food there. And she goes, yeah. She goes, the amount of money I paid, they shouldn't have shown up with my food in foil. So I guess this is my version of like, am I the asshole? Feel free to weigh in. I'd love to hear it. But spoiler alert, I'm not. Anyway, if you want to hire me for an event, you probably won't now because you'll think that I'm just going to bitch about you on my podcast. But how many events have you really heard me? Like, I mean, I've complained about a couple of them, but they've been pretty psychopathic people that I've had to work with. But the most part, I get along great with my clients. I have a really good track record, and I do a lot of them a year. So the fact that I've only complained about a couple, I think, is pretty safe. So, you know, it's fine. I'll still work with you. I'll sign a non-disclosure if you want to stay off my podcast, or you can just, you know, not be an asshole. Speaking of not being an asshole, this next guest is awesome. I wanted to interview her. I know why, but I don't know why. It was just like I had spoken with her husband the week before and thought it might be cute to kind of follow it up with an interview with her. They both have very similar jobs at competing newspapers, and so I thought it'd be funny to sit down with Jess and Jess Marshall from the Times Union and talk with her a little bit. We had actually talked a while back about doing something together anyway. So just it was good timing, but we're still going to you'll hear our ideas for silly stuff that we want to do together to relive our youth. But we had a really nice time talking right at the Times Union offices just off of Wolf Road. And it was great. And it was the same day that my I won Best Comedian by their readers poll. So, you know, I felt like royalty walking in there. It doesn't take much to make me feel special, honestly. So I hope you enjoy the interview with Jess, and stick around for Jess Marshall on the Mistress of None, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes. Today, my guest is Jess Marshall. Jessica Marshall, which do you prefer?
As long as you don't call me Jennifer, I'm cool with anything.
Well, I won't do that. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you? I'm so excited to be here.
I'm well. Thank you very much for having. Speaking of being here, I mean, that's sweet of you to say. I came here is the Times Union. We are at the Times Union. Said that right because I goofed up last week, but that is where Jess works. Jess, tell us what you do for the Times Union.
I am the Times Union's multimedia producer, and that's a fancy way of saying that I do their podcasts and video content.
Very cool. How long have you been with the Times Union?
Just over 4 years, actually. Nice. I started in February of 2020, just I think 2 weeks before the stay-at-home order got dropped. So, you know, I knew where the bathrooms were in the building, but that was it before I got sent home. So I'm still, like, right now, I'm still familiarizing myself with the surroundings.
Yeah. Well, what timing, huh?
Yeah.
What a great time, though, to be in charge of doing the digital stuff, though, because that's what everything kind of turned into.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, for the industry as a whole, I mean, I can only speak to my experience at the Times Union, but it seems to me that the industry as a whole, newspapers really kind of either took to it or they didn't. Mm-hmm. And we did pretty well with remote work and we really made it work. And, you know, going on today, we are, you know, we are largely back in the office, but we have a renewed perspective on producing digital content.
Yeah, well, I think everybody kind of got, you know, a little technological bump when everything happened. Like everybody was forced to learn some new tasks and new traits and everything to get by to do their work and stuff. I used to laugh because when I had a day job at Albany County, I always used to say, you know, I bet I could do this from home. And they were like, there's no way. There's no way. It's too confidential. There's too much, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm like, look at you now.
Yeah.
You should have let me stay home. Like, I might still work there if you let me work from home.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda.
You know, I wasn't the most pleasant coworker, but they, you know, they knew that I didn't want to be there. It's all good. It worked out. It's been 11 years now. So, c'est la vie. Yes. So is it like your full-time job is doing that? That's amazing.
Yep.
And what were you doing before?
So, I was doing a whole bunch of different things before. Immediately prior to coming to the Times Union, I was at WMHT. I was producing New York Now, their politics and government show. Before that, I had a stint in advertising, which was very short-lived. And before that, I kind of cut my teeth in the podcasting radio space at WAMC.
Okay. Yes, I have heard that you are quite the podcaster.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your own podcast.
Sure. So which one? There's a couple.
The one that I was on.
Okay. That one is the one that I do the most of. So the Times Union has a weekly news podcast called The Eagle. We produce it every week. We talk about, you know, what's new, what was, you know, really big in the news that week. We talk to newsmakers like yourself and kind of just expand on and highlight the work that our reporters do awesome. For a wider digital audience.
Nice. Well, then I feel a little ignorant because I did not know that you had multiple podcasts. So,
well, I always love a chance to talk about all of my podcasts.
Fill me in.
Yeah. So, all right. So how far back do we go? First, actually, I do want to say about podcasting, it is like the career of my dreams and it is not something that I ever thought that I would get into. You know, back when I was in high school, I don't even know if podcasts exist or they were just coming. They were just starting. We didn't really know what they could do and how far of an wide of an audience that they could reach. But I fell into it and I love it and I don't want to do anything else.
That's
ever.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, good for you then.
Okay. So my podcast. So the Times Union, we have several podcasts, actually. The Eagle is our only kind of ongoing podcast. It's a weekly podcast. But last year we produced a limited series podcast called Rainwalker, The Lost Boy. It's a true crime series. We had 7 episodes and then 2 bonus episodes, just kind of taking a look back at the case of Jalik Rainwalker, who was a 12-year-old boy who went missing in 2007 up in Washington County. His case was ruled a probable child homicide, but no one has ever been, you know, brought to justice for it. Yeah. So we took a look back at the case and really kind of talked to a lot of people and learned some new things about the case. I mean, you know, we still don't know who killed Jalik Rainwalker. I don't know that we will ever know, but I hope we got a little bit closer with the podcast.
Do you have any theories?
I have lots of theories. However, those theories aren't things that we can report on because a lot of it is hearsay. A lot of it is, you know, not kind of confirmed or backed up by facts or people that would go on the record. It's difficult to do a story like that.
Yeah.
And it's especially difficult to do a story like that where there is no actual suspect that's been kind of arrested or identified by police. Like,
yeah.
you can't assume things.
Sure.
Unfortunately.
But you'll tell me your theory off the record.
Oh yeah.
Done.
We can, yeah, we'll go out for a drink afterward and we'll just spill it all.
Not that it's funny. I'm sorry.
No. I, you know, it was an interesting experience because, you know, it is an unsolved case. Usually when I do the podcast, we're talking about things that have already been reported and confirmed. Mm-hmm. So kind of walking that line between telling the story and, you know, keeping it to what we can report was tough.
And I think, I mean, that's things like that now, like true crime is just, it's so popular. People are obsessed with that kind of thing. So I could see, it is such an important story in the capital region. I mean, obviously it happens all over the place, but there was something I remember very specifically about that story that just really grabbed and held on. And I don't know if it was the mystery of it all or because I, again, it's not the only child that unfortunately has gone missing, but there was always, what do you think made that more popular than other missing children stories?
I mean, there's probably many reasons, and one could argue that, you know, Jalique Rainwalker is not a name that's known well across the nation. I mean, at the time, I can't say how much national attention it got. I mean, in the years since, you know, it's been on true crime shows. Mm-hmm. I've actually was just on one. The name is Never Seen Again on Paramount Plus.
I did see that.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a story that people want to keep coming back to. However, at the same time, it's a story that most people don't know.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's one of those things. I think it is kind of the mystery and the drama of it, but it's also, you know, a child went missing.
Yeah.
And a child was presumably killed. So that really hits you right in the heart.
Sure.
So
yeah, I didn't mean to be so geocentric with it.
Oh,
in fact, my friend in Idaho who I met last week, he was like, I love the podcast. He goes, make sure you're explaining some things to people. He goes, because sometimes you're being, he used the word esoteric, which I don't have a problem with. But I was like, oh, yeah. So to me, it just seems like it was, you know, huge news,
right,
relatively speaking.
And it was, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
In the capital region, you can go down the street and be like, hey, do you remember Jalique Rainwalker? And maybe 8 times out of 10, people will be like, oh, yeah, that was the kid that went missing.
Yeah.
You know, people knew it. But yeah.
Well. What other podcasts?
So we have two more that are, you know, ones that we talk about now. One is kind of no longer being produced because the story pretty much wrapped up. Nexium on Trial.
Okay.
That's our podcast. that was actually started before I came to the Times Union. At the time, I can't remember exactly what was happening in February of 2020, but I believe Keith Raniere was awaiting trial or trial was underway. I can't remember exactly the timeline of it. So there was still a lot of the story to tell left, mm-hmm, right? He was convicted, sentenced to 120 years in prison, you know, and some of the people around him faced trial and, you know, serving prison time, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a lot of that story to tell. And that podcast kind of follows the progress of Keith's trial and what happened afterward. But, you know, if you don't know the Nexium story, do you have another hour? Because I can go through it all. But basically,
that's nationwide. I know that
And that podcast actually was quite popular for that reason, mm-hmm, right? Because it was such a big story across the nation, across the world, actually, too. You know, there were the HBO documentary. There was the one on Stars, I believe. Yeah, the Seduced one with India Oxenberg. Like, so it got a lot of national attention. So those podcasts tend to get really high numbers because, you know, somebody's searching for it on Google and up it pops. So
yeah.
It goes way beyond the Capital Region's audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cults, man.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, murder shows and cults. That's what I spend my free time watching. So
Now we know we're getting to the bottom of why you love your podcasting so much. Only specific podcasts. But no, I mean, it's a hot topic. A lot of people are really into. I'm afraid to get into true crime because I know that I would be hooked and I don't like that it's real.
Yeah.
Like, I need to stay in this fiction, fantasy land kind of thing. Like, ignorance is bliss when it comes to certain things. I hate to admit it, but right now, like, that's just where I need to live. And I would start watching that. Like, I mean, I already have some messed up dreams. Like, if I start watching true crime, I already suspect my husband of so many things. Like, we go on hikes and we'll get near like a cliff and I'm like, is this it? Is this where you push me? And he's like, maybe you keep it up. Like, we're joking, but there's always a part of me that's like,
but what is?
Are you?
Yeah. You're really joking. Well, I mean, honestly, true crime podcasting and true crime, you know, documentary making, like, on one hand, it always makes for a really compelling story. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a story that's hard to tell, and it's interesting, and, you know, it keeps people riveted, and, you know, there's a lot of intrigue to it. At the same time, when you're making those true crime podcasts and you have to think about a dead child for 8 hours a day for nine months at a clip, like, I think, you know, it took us about 9 months to get the first 7 episodes together. And yeah, that takes a toll.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be a certain type of person or be able to at least compartmentalize.
Right.
Because that would be, yeah, that would be really tough. I think I took this course when I was in college. The name is escaping me right now, but it was a philosophy course. And the teacher talked a lot about, like, the neo-television mind and the paleo-television mind. And he said how back then, like, when you had, what was that thing with Orson Welles where he did the UFO invasion?
Oh, yeah, the fake broadcast?
Yeah. And people were jumping off of bridges because they were, like, you know. And so this was, you know, the late 90s when I was in college. And then he said, there's going to be a time where people listen to actual news and it won't affect them at all because they will have been so desensitized. Yeah. Like, that fourth wall has been broken down so many times. So it's really fascinating to study that. And I am one of those people. Like, I can listen to something and be like, huh? And it's like, no, like, 7 people were murdered. I'm like, yeah, but that guy, like, you know, yeah. I have to shut it off. I have to pretend that it's a TV show just so I can, you know, wake up the next day. But it's really, it is fascinating. I've watched a couple, and sometimes I watch a reel, and at the end of it, it'll be, they, like, sneak some true crime in. And I look at the scroll at the bottom, and I'm like, I don't have 8 minutes. Come on. Yeah. It's like you see, like, a person in a, they're getting grilled in a room, and you're like, what she said to the police. Now I'm like, shit, here goes the next half hour. You got me.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't even want to, and I watch them. So, yes, obviously, it's a good, maybe I should change things up.
Well, you know, I mean,
let's go on a crime spree and then start a podcast together.
You can go on the crime spree, and I will do the podcast, and you can be on the podcast.
It's another thing we're going to talk about when we're off the air. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, there was a point, I think, it was probably during the pandemic, actually. So before I was, you know, immersed in the Jalique Rainwalker podcast, but that I needed to have my entertainment be complete escape. Like, I couldn't watch the true crime stuff. Like, yeah. I needed pure and utter fantasy, you know, which is plentiful in my house. There's a lot of nerdy pop culture fantasy stuff circulating in my house. So it wasn't too hard to.
Yeah.
To escape that or to get into that.
We watched a lot of older, not like super old, but older movies that we knew were going to be funny. Like, every night we picked out a new one, like Tommy Boy, Bob, you know, stuff that we knew was going to be funny.
Yeah.
Stuff that we didn't have to, like, think about because it was tough. It was, you know, I was home the whole time and he would leave every few days to go to work. And, like, I'd be like, what do you want to do tonight? I'm like, we're going to eat pot pie and we're going to watch Groundhog's Day, like some SNL something. But
that sounds like the perfect night, actually.
It was not terrible. I, you know, like, I hate what happened, but, you know, we made the best of it.
Yeah.
But speaking of your household,
yes,
the reason why I wanted to be, I mean, I've been wanting to sit down with you for a long time. One, we've been talking about doing some, like, you know, Olin Mills glamour studio kind of. We both missed out in our childhood on getting one of those pictures with, like, the electric backgrounds because
the lasers.
We were both poor kids. Is that accurate?
No, my mom just didn't like the look of it.
Really? Yeah. Oh.
She wanted the clean, traditional, like, blue or gray look.
Okay.
And I just wanted the lasers.
Gotcha. Well, my mom was just cheap, I think. But, like, I wanted that, and I wanted the one where it's like I'm looking straight ahead and then the other floating head is looking off in the distance. So we're going to find a way to recreate that, and we're going to make that. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to figure that out.
Well, my husband didn't tell you about his Olin Mills photo, did he?
I almost dropped my mic. The man that she's speaking of, you may remember him from my last 2 episodes. I met with Rick, and that's why I wanted to meet with you. I thought it'd be a fun way to follow up. They are kind of the Montague and Capulets of the local publishing scene, because Rick works at the Gazette, and you work at the Times Union, and yet You coexist, and that's magical.
We coexist. We do.
But I do. I'm going to need to see this Glamour Studios of Rick.
So he might kill me for divulging this, but he had true Nolan crime. Mills. I know, right?
There we go.
The true crime beast. His photo is a lovely picture of he was adorable, mm-hmm. cute little kid. And he had a beloved dog. And instead of it being, the dog was a German Shepherd, instead of it being his face, you know, on front and his face in profile, it was his face on front and the dog. Like, just a disembodied kind of dog.
Jessica, I need this photo.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I have it right now. You'd have to ask his mother.
Get this photo for me, please. I beg of you. I've never asked you for anything. No, I'm sorry. That's not true.
Yes. It's a lovely, like, the dog is adorable and he's adorable, but it's just one of those classic Olin Mills situations, but it's a dog, you know, like a human and a dog, not the same human.
Oh, I'm seeing it. I need this. I need this picture so badly. Cause we did our cross, like a cross post episode kind of thing where he interviewed me for his podcast. I interviewed him for mine and I'm playing them back to back. And you know what? I was looking for another picture cause he sent me his headshots and I was giving him a hard time. I was like, come on, like, let's get you some, you know? And he's like, I know. He's like, I could tell that he took the picture. I was like, at least get a blank wall. But now that I know he's got Olin Mills.
I have one too, though. I mean, not with a dog, but I have an equally embarrassing Olin Mills photo.
Did you have any ones where you were up against a tree?
No.
We're just going to have to recreate all of these things. Yeah. We'll get all glammed up one day and just, this is just what's going to happen.
I love it.
We could set it up for other people too. If you want to come in and relive your youth, wear your acid wash. Your bright 90s colors, whatever you want. And we are going to just make this happen. I think it's going to be amazing. I think we're really onto something.
I'm down.
Yeah. True crime. Olin Mills. What else?
Lasers.
Lasers. The lasers. Oh, God, the lasers. So one of the things that I find incredibly fascinating about you is that you are a figure skater.
Yes.
That is incredible to me. I always, of course, would like slide around the floor on my socks and tell myself that was enough. I was going to be in the Olympics someday. I stay very far away from ice, but like, you're not just, it's not just a hobby for you. Like, you are like going after it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, had you been doing this the whole time or in the past few years, did it kind of pick up a little bit?
Sort of. So I started skating when I was, I want to say like 6 or 7, I started taking lessons over at Union College. I took basic skills lessons and I just loved it. Like, I fell in love with it. I really like took to it. I ended up competing at fairly high levels throughout my childhood. And I kind of stopped competing when I was about 17. Went to college, discovered, you know, boys and parties, and then as one does. After college, I kind of, you know, you're an adult now, you have to pay for it yourself. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, kind of, you know, when I was just getting started with a career and trying to find a steady source of income, skating was a little, I stuck to it, but I didn't do it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't compete. I wasn't, you know, practicing every week and I wasn't really taking lessons at all. But it was still in my head. And then Rick and I moved to New York for a couple of years. And down there is when I kind of got back into competing. I joined a skating team that was called a synchronized skating team, which is kind of like, you know, Rockettes on ice a little bit. You know, that's a loose metaphor. But it's, you know, a group of skaters on the ice performing different maneuvers and in lines and pinwheels and, you know, fancy footwork and all of that stuff.
Nice.
Which is really, really fun. I really, really enjoyed that discipline of figure skating. But then I decided to have some children, which, you know, skating regularly and being pregnant and then having a newborn, not the most consistent thing.
Sure.
Plus your body changes a lot, so you have to adjust to that. That's a whole thing about figure skating, like this whole rant that I have. But and then after I had my second child, I got back into it kind of very regularly and started competing alone, like singles again.
Okay, yeah, because I did notice it definitely in the last like 5 or 6 years. Like,
yeah.
It started out like I would kind of see something and I'd be like, oh, that's cute. Oh, that's nice. And then I was like, oh, wait, okay, no. All right, she's like Wow, she's good at this. Like, you know, it's amazing. It's great to watch. Like,
oh, thank you.
Takes a lot of discipline. So
it does a lot of discipline, a lot of stretching, a lot of stretching, a little bit of decompression afterward, maybe some Advil. You know, like it's being an adult. It's harder, not just because it's not harder on your body necessarily. It really depends on who you are, what your skill level is, and how hard you push yourself.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're an adult, you tend to have a full-time job. You may or may not have children and families. Like, you have a lot of other things going on in your life. You can't just be at the rink all the time training. So, you know, it's a balancing act.
But also, no matter who you are or even what level of, like, athleticism you have, your body is just not – it doesn't bounce back the way it once did.
See, you're right. Yes, that's true. However, I learned as an adult skater that if you have the right kind of support, the right kind of technique, and you are really, like, okay with where you're at in the moment, like, you don't really have as many – that's not as much of an issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, if you get injured, you know, that's a whole thing. But, like, if you are very patient with yourself and you go about it the right way, you know, you're not going to be doubled over afterward, you know, clutching your back necessarily. You work with the body that you have.
Sure. I just know that, you know, now when I play with my band, the next day I feel like I got hit by a truck. But yeah. I'm jumping off the stage and climbing up on the bar and doing things that maybe 46-year-olds shouldn't be doing. But it feels great at the time. Yeah. And then the next day I'm like, oh, that wasn't smart. But I have amnesia. I'm going to do it again the next time. I'm going to keep doing it until I can't do it.
Yeah.
Not that I'm comparing, you know, definitely not the same thing.
No. I mean, but.
Because I can also play sitting down if I need to. That's not an option for you.
A little harder.
Yeah. A little bit harder.
But, you know, with stuff like that, like if I was doing that too, you know, like if I was, you know, not in the context of an athletic endeavor, yeah, it takes a while longer than you did when you were a kid to bounce back from that stuff. Like I can't stay out late at night and drink and party and then be okay the next day. You know, it's not, that doesn't happen anymore. But with skating, there's, you know, kind of a regimen, like a training regimen that you follow that helps to, I don't want to say I don't ever suffer after practices, but it helps to kind of keep you, to mitigate those effects.
Sure.
Yeah.
I laugh because I think about how I get injured these days. And it's like, you know, back in my 20s, I'd be like, oh, you know, I got drunk and wrestled a bear. And it's like now, like, oh, what happened to you? I was like, I was opening my freezer. Like, I literally, like, hurt my shoulder opening my freezer one day. I just pulled it the wrong way. And I was like, are you kidding? Like... Well, I like couldn't like for like I just couldn't move my arm right for a couple of days.
Oh no! Well, if you told me you got in a bear fight, I would believe you. If you got hit in the shoulder by your freezer, but then told me it was a bear fight.
So just lie to people is what you're telling me.
Yeah. Sure.
All right, I can do that. We're gonna forget what I just said. I was opening the freezer probably for an ice pack. You know, I don't know if is that irony or.
Ice is good. Ice is good.
So ice bear. We've come full circle yet again. So you have a trip coming up.
I do, yes. I'm going to head to Germany in a couple of weeks. There is a competition every year in Germany that is adults only. You have to be 28 to compete. And it people kind of call it like the worlds, adult worlds. It's not really adult worlds because you don't have to qualify to get there. Like anybody can participate. But it's just sort of this gathering of adult skaters from around the world, which has been really, really amazing for me personally. And I know it is for other adult skaters to kind of find this community of people that have the same mindset and love for skating that you do. Because when I was a kid, you know, like people are going to steal your skates or crack you in the knee. Like it's a very like, you know, cutthroat competitive scene.
Yeah.
When you're a kid, there's a lot of pressure, you know, you want to go to the Olympics or, you know, some form of high level competition and people aren't really nice to each other.
Yeah.
Competitors aren't nice to each other. But, you know, in adult skating in this kind of community of skaters from around the world, it's so different. It's so collegial. It's so like everybody champions everybody else, like even if you're competing against them. So
that's
just
awesome.
Really refreshing and like a healthy way to stay, you know, involved in athletics.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm at this point, like, I I mean, just not that I'm saying you can't, but I know that the way the world works is like there's like definitely a cap for doing things like the Olympics and stuff like that, right?
That ship has sailed.
Okay, right. So I just I didn't want to be the one to say it. I just wanted to make sure. So that's got to be good to, like, you know, take the pressure off so you can still enjoy it but still feel like you're being a little competitive. But, like, that sounds
– absolutely.
That sounds like a great mix.
It really makes skating more accessible to more people, you know, to not just be like, all right, well, your career's over at 17 and you can't go anywhere else or do anything else, like, which was sort of the tradition. Like, when I was a kid, like, adult skating was in its infancy. Like, it wasn't really – like, they didn't have the adult national competition. They didn't have this competition in Germany. Like – There weren't a lot of avenues for adults to stay competitive. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, either you're going to the Olympics or you're just not skating.
Yeah.
It was very much like either or. But now, and even in the lower levels of skating these days, now I'm getting into the weeds, but in the lower levels of skating, there's a lot more levels and opportunities for younger kids to skate too. So, like, if you love skating, but you're not... you know you're not going to the Olympics, right, for whatever reason, you still can feel validated and enjoy competing in the sport because there's these other opportunities for you to do so. It's nice. Really cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I could talk about skating for, you know, days.
I'm getting that.
Yeah.
Or that and true crime. I mean, it seems everything I think you're well-versed in.
Eclectic interests.
I like it. Yeah. Hand in hand. So what, anything exciting coming up for you here at the Times Union or?
Yes, actually. So we're going to, premiere another podcast soon. This one's about the Schoharie limo crash of 2018. Yes. Not a happy story, no. Obviously. And not really true crime in this, you know, the sense that the Jalique Rainwalker story was. It's a case, the Schoharie limo crash case is over, right? Yeah. It's done. There's obviously still news coming out about it, but you know, someone has been convicted and is serving prison time. Yeah. Someone's been held accountable. So, but it's such a complex story. There's so many arms to it. There's so many, like, different, you know, things about it that I think are really important for the public to know.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, not least of which we don't want anything like this to ever happen again.
Sure.
So
there was definitely a lot of negligence on part of the limo company and
I mean it's so complicated I couldn't even begin. It's gonna take about 7 or 8 episodes to just go through all of it, but yeah, it's a story. It's one of the most important stories that we've ever told at the Times Union, and I'm working with reporter Larry Rulison, who is a freaking superstar. That guy is amazing. I've been working with him because he's been covering it from the very start, and he was the reporter that broke a lot of the stories that were kind of integral to moving the cases forward. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
Not sure if the exact premiere date we're aiming for this year, but yeah, it's going to be a deep dive into the case from start to finish. So
wow.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to say I look forward to that. Like, you know, it's weird to say, but I'm friends with the people who own the Apple Barrel.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So I remember that day, obviously, explicitly just being like, are you guys okay? Like, wow. Yeah. And I'm from Schoharie County. So.
Oh, why didn't I know that?
Yeah. I don't.
I thought you were from Rensselaer County.
No.
Oh, okay.
Maybe you should have me back on your podcast, right?
We'll go back to the beginning.
We'll go
next
back
time.
To the beginning. Yeah. Well, I lived there for from like sixth grade till I graduated. So, you know, definitely not making it about me, but just like hits.
Well, that's part of the story too, in that, like, you know, the community in Schoharie, the community also in Amsterdam, neighboring Montgomery County there, like, those communities were severely affected by this, you know, whether or not they knew the people that died or, you know, anyone else who was involved. Like, that's as much part of the story as anything else.
Sure.
So,
and yeah, that's, I mean, that was such a, like, a huge story, and that definitely got some national attention. Yeah. It was very sensationalized, which is odd for people from communities like that to face. They're not used to that kind of, you know, like, just, I mean, having something like that and then having, like, reporters come in and just start asking. It's like
just
like
descending. Yeah.
Very quiet, very keep to themselves kind of people. So that, that was, they'll be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be a really comprehensive look at back at it.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's hard to find a good adjective to say, right. Like, you know, like, oh, that sounds great. Like, obviously it doesn't, but
yeah,
it'll be very interesting. I look forward to listening to that.
Excellent. I'll keep you posted.
All right. Well, thank you so much for finding time to hang out with me today.
Of course. I had a lot of fun. This is great.
And I'm definitely going to, my whole idea is to pit you and Rick against one another. So I'm going to check out and see how many people listen to each one. And
Ooh, yeah.
So it's up to you folks. Go ahead. When you're done listening, go back and listen to it again so that women can win all the time.
I feel like our ethic is, you know, your success is my success. We try to look at it that way.
I'm, and of course I'm totally kidding. I adore your guys' relationship. I think that I've known Rick for quite some time, and I've known you through Rick, and the two of you are just wonderful people. So it's like,
you.
Nice to see you together. And I love that you're both, like, it cracked me up when he said that he was working at the Gazette. I was like, oh, like,
yes, the dueling multimedia producers.
So we'll have a charity event where you guys, like, you know, duke it out, but not like a physical fight. Like, you do some like ice skating thing and he can do some nerd kind of Lego building. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah, sounds fun. I'm game.
All right. Well, thank you again for having me. And I hope to see you very soon.
Yes.
This has been Erin Harkes on The Mistress of None, and we will be right back.
You're listening to The Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Back to The Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes. Thanks again to Jess Marshall for meeting with me. We had a nice time. Sounds like she has some really interesting things coming up, so I hope you give that a listen and check that out. Don't forget, guys, Wednesdays are the new Saturdays, so tonight, UPH in Saratoga, Women Aren't Funny. We've got Jane Condon, a couple other really funny ladies on that show. And then I am headed back down to, first I'm going to Rochester to open for Judy Gold this weekend. So if you are in Rochester or know someone who is, please spread the word or come see the show. Next week I'm headed back down to New York for some shows at New York Comedy Club and a couple other places. And then I've got some other really great shows coming up in May, a lot of comedy. In June I'm going to be headlining a couple of shows in a row, so... we're also having the one-year anniversary of the Women Aren't Funny. Can you believe it's been 1 year? Because I cannot. So that's going to be June 5th, I think. But we'll have time to talk about it. But come to UPH tonight. I'll tell you all about it. And check in with me next Wednesday and every Wednesday for a brand new episode. Thanks again to Jess Marshall with the Times Union. I'm Erin Harkes. This is The Mistress of None. And I am available for all of your corporate events. Thank you. I love you all. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.